Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground.
Touchdown, Arizona!
That was beautiful!
Oh, my goodness!
The latest news and notes on the Arizona Cardinals from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown!
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown! Larry Fitzgerald.
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
So, Darren, since you're the expert these days at fielding questions, all sorts of questions, and we'll get to message board guy a little bit later. Oh, we'll get to that guy. There's no doubt about it. I have a question for you, if I can, here on Cardinals Underground. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, occasionally joined by Ron Wolfley. Wolf, good to see you over there. Since this is your website, Darren, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Is there room for a Paulie Pencilneck Harry High School football story? You know, Wolf has his stories, other guys. Can I tell you a story? Is that possible over here?
Of course you can. I don't know if Olmes will keep it in, but go ahead.
It was my junior year of high school, and we started, well, I'll bottom line it, we started 0-5. We were not good. We were neither big nor fast, okay? Just as evidence, I was both Beanie Wells and Adrian Wilson, if you will. Starter at running back, starting at strong safety.
Yeah.
And, well, we started 0-5. We were not good. But every guy had to make a decision at that point, did they not? Everyone looked at each other and they said, you know what? I'm not 0-5. Are you 0-5? Are you 0-5? And you know what? I'll be gall darned. We did turn it around. And my point of the entire story is, even though we went to the CCS playoffs in NorCal, we got smash-caked in round one, 62-7 by Bellarmine Prep, and Mark Dumont ran for 257 yards and four touchdowns, and I missed a brutal tackle on an open field 71-yard jaunt. I don't remember any of it exactly. The point here is that it always starts with the players on any team at any level. Does it not, gentlemen? So to me, if anything's going to start with the Cardinals at 1-5, it starts with the players. Period.
I mean, I don't know where else you would go at this point. I mean, you can talk about, you know, adding players or moving people around, but I mean, we know what this roster is about. We've seen them play all season. I mean, I agree with you. It starts with the players. I mean, ultimately, that's who's playing the game. And Wolf can speak better to this than, I mean, you can have a certain amount of schemes, but I mean, yeah, it starts with the players because they're the only ones who can do anything about it.
All right, I am totally confused here. It starts with the players. Paul, have you,
the players
done,
mindset,
have you
I guess.
Done the Cardinals Underground? Have you done this podcast since the bye week when we were, that's all we talked about. That's all I said, Paul. It starts with the players. It begins and ends with the players. You are definitely correct, Paul. Glad to see you come around 3 weeks later. There's no doubt about that. Look, this season right now, is ugly as it may seem. It is about developing these young guys on this team that are the future of this team. And I know nobody wants to hear that. I don't want to say it. Yet that is really when you're 1-5 and the San Francisco 49ers are 5-1 right now, and you're likely not to come, there's probably not going to be a wild card team coming out of the NFC West. This season is about the players getting better quickly. Guys like A.J. Jefferson, guys like Patrick Peterson, guys like Darrell Washington. Darrell Washington, to me, is a guy that I do believe could be a Pro Bowl player down the road. This season is about him developing. Dumpster Dan Williams developing. Calais Campbell continuing to develop. And then on the offensive side, of course, it's Kevin Cobb and his development. It's about the young players right now at 1-5, and it begins with the players. If the Cardinals are going to get better as a football team, it's going to be because these young guys develop and develop quickly.
Personnel changes there, Darren.
Yes.
What's realistic? What's feasible? What's doable? You got a 53-man roster. If there were great players on the street, they'd be in uniform. I know guys on practice squads of other teams. I mean, it's the NFL. How much could you radically change personnel, even if you wanted to, as a head coach?
Well, I don't think you can radically change anything. I mean, that's what the offseason's for. That's what you do. That's what training camp's about. And you know, one of the reasons that things have fallen the way they have in terms of personnel on this team is because not only of the players you've picked already, but how the players that you have picked have performed in practices. you know, just for example, a Stuart Bradley, who we all thought was going to be playing a large role in this team, is not playing a large role. I don't think that's because they signed him and said, well, I know what everybody thinks, but never mind. It's what they've seen in practice, and they're just not comfortable putting him out him more often. So I do think it's limited. There's a few places where you could see possibilities. There's a few places where that are obvious. Linebacker's a great example. Bradley is a good example. I think they're going to put him out there more and see what kind of player he is, regardless of how he's done so far, because they have to, because you're going to have to figure out if you're going to want him going forward past the season or where he fits. They've been trying him outside as a pass rusher in certain packages more often. That's something they're going to try out. Clearly, you're going to see more Sam Acho and O'Brien Schofield. Why? Just like Wolf said, you've got to find out what these young guys have. And let's face it, at this point, you know exactly what you have in Joey Porter and Clark Hagans. And I don't know I don't even know if those guys are even on the roster beyond 2011. You have to start seeing what these other guys can bring to the table going into the offseason and how you're going to have to fix that position. Other than that, I mean, I've heard people, oh, well, let's see Deuce Latuhi. I think Rex Hadnott's played fine, and I don't know why you would make that change just for change's sake, so I don't see anything there. You're not going to change out the cornerbacks, I don't think. You know what Richard Marshall's about, and you want to, again, see the young cornerbacks develop. That's what A.J. Jefferson and Patrick Peterson have been doing. Quarterback, I mean, I don't care what anybody wants to say about Kevin Cobb, and clearly he's not playing nearly as well as they were hoping or how they need him to play, but you're not going to bench him. You're not. And I've had a couple people suggest to me, well, at least give him a game off to clear his head and everything. That's the worst thing you can do. To muddy the waters with a game with the other quarterback, I think would be a disaster on a billion different levels. So, you know, I don't know if there's any other changes other than getting some of those young linebackers in there that you could make or you're going to make.
Well, in the second half, we saw a lot more of Sam Acho, and you saw a lot more of O'Brien Schofield. You know, even their limitations, maybe in knowing the defense, that aside. Although with Acho, that's not a problem. I mean, Ray Horton has called him brilliant. Not smart. He said he's called him brilliant in knowing the defense. So, Wolf, to what degree is Kevin Cobb falling into that category heading that Darren just said, you got to find out what you have at quarterback? Obviously, he needs the experience, just 7 career starts coming into this year. He needs the seasoning. But to some degree, you still have to find out what you have in Kevin Cobb, don't you?
No, absolutely, Paulie. I agree with Darren. And it's going back to what I said just a moment ago. You know, if this season truly is at 1-5 right now again, and the 49ers at 5-1, and you're not likely going to get a wild card coming out of the NFC West, we know all that. If it truly is about the development of these young guys, the pinnacle of those young guys is Kevin Cobb. One could say the rest of this season offensively is really about Kevin Cobb fitting into this offense and evaluating Kevin Cobb as you go forward right now. And, you know, look, I think we've talked about this many, many times. I do believe if Kevin Cobb gets the experience and gets the exposure, he's going to be okay, because his problems, to me, they're directly tied to the poise in the pocket or the lack of pocket presence that we've seen so far. He's got to get comfortable in the pocket. And as I've said before, I believe it's the building block, it's the foundation of good quarterback play, that you can hang in the pocket and be okay with hanging in the pocket. Everything else comes off that. Obviously, if you're comfortable in the pocket, your reads are going to be that much better. Your progression is going to go that much more smoothly. Your decision-making is not impacted by the fact you're uncomfortable with being in the pocket. And the execution of the throws will be much better if you're comfortable in the pocket. It seems like it's the foundation of solid quarterback play. And I think if Kevin Cobb gets the exposure that he needs and gains the experience that he needs with being in the pocket and being okay with that, I think in the end, this trade is going to go exactly the way the Cardinals hoped it would.
Okay, so, and you obviously just answered a good chunk of this, but I get, as a former player and as somebody who's seen this, is there any concern that this is going to be just a learning curve thing?
There's always a concern, D. Okay. There's always a concern. Listen, look, when when the Arizona Cardinals went out and got Kevin Cobb, they weren't saying, oh, this guy's a Pro Bowler, it's a done deal, it's all over, forget about it.
True.
They looked at everybody that was available. They looked at people in the draft. They looked at people they could trade for, and they looked for the available free agents that were out there, right? They surmised, they determined that Kevin Cobb gave them the best percentage chance of being the guy they hoped he would be, period. There are no guarantees in life. We've said this over and over and over again. Right now, of course, there's concern. There's concern. He played very well, I think, in the first two games. And since that point, it looks like he's plateaued off and maybe even regressed to a certain degree. Is there concern? Of course there is. But again, only time will tell.
So basically, the question you're posing, Darren, is what I think a lot of fans are wondering, most fans, yes, watching the Cardinals this year. Are we seeing growing pains out of the quarterback, or are you seeing a quarterback that's just struggling, you know, signs, symptoms of an inability to play at a certain level? Is that the question you're essentially posing?
I just want to jump in here, Paulie, if I could, and just say this too, okay, because it speaks to your point. A lot of people say, well, look at Cam Newton. Cam Newton's out there. Everybody is different. Everybody is different, period. Okay, it's just like an artist. You tell him to paint a picture of the ocean. Okay, he's going to paint it differently than somebody else. Everybody is different. You can't say, well, Cam Newton picked it. Look at Alex Smith up there in San Francisco. That's true. They've picked it up well up there. Okay, there's no doubt about it. Alex Smith has progressed. Cam Newton has shocked everybody. And I mean, I shouldn't say everybody. Warren Moon told me Cam Newton's going to be a big-time quarterback because he's a winner, okay? But outside of Warren Moon, there weren't a lot of NFL analysts looking at Cam Newton and expecting Cam Newton to go out there and play. My point is this. Every system is different, and every person that is in that system is different.
Well, and it's one thing. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Wolf. It's one thing to learn a new offense, new verbiage, new way of doing things, new system. It's a different thing to go into a different style of offense, which is what I think Kevin Cobb has tried to say the last couple of weeks. He sort of hinted around that it's a different style of offense. It requires a lot different footwork than he's used to. That just takes a lot more than he's used to in the past few years. I'll give you an example. I saw something on the sideline that I rarely see in 7 years on the Cardinals sideline. It was there for everyone to see. Sold out stadium. Everyone could have seen it if you were paying attention. And that was, about midway through the second quarter, there was Chris Miller going through a three-step drop with Kevin Cobb on the sideline. Rarely do you see anything instructional on the sideline. Usually, you know, there's X's and O's. They're looking at the photos. They're looking at clipboards. They're talking. There's, you know, there's yelling. There's shouting. There's celebrating. Rarely do you see any instructing on the sideline. And there was Chris Miller going through a three-step drop and then plant and arm angle. He was sort of showing him, okay, this is the way your arm should go. You know. And I think it was probably on the heels of a couple of those early throws that you saw in those first two series. So it just makes me wonder, okay, if you're not comfortable with the footwork, which would seem pretty basic at this point, if you can get that remedied, if that's a byproduct of a different style of offense, then maybe that might go a long way towards solving a lot of the stuff that Wolf's talking about, presence and awareness and comfort in the pocket.
I would agree to a certain point. You know, again, it goes back to what we talked about in this podcast a few weeks ago about, you know, knowing where to go with the ball and that kind of stuff. I think that also still is playing a role in it as he, you know, learns as we go kind of thing. But one of the points that Wisenhunt made about the footwork part of it is that that's one of the reasons that of the errant passes, and that's what really caught your eye against Pittsburgh. You know, Cobb did say that the Rob Housler miss was less about he actually said it was where he wanted to throw it. They were kind of in a miscommunication on, you know, maybe where Housler was supposed to cut it off or cut inside, and you know, whatever. Obviously, you can't miss that throw. There was a couple other ones. The one Larry was wide open coming across, and Kevin just put it way too far out in front of him. It should have been picked off. It went right to Troy Polamalu, actually. You know, those things, are they completely footwork related? Hopefully, and hopefully that's something that can be fixed. And again, going back to Wolf's point about he thinks in the end that this will work out, I think that's the hope. You're hoping that you're narrowing as we go more and more of whatever the issues are. And if you can just fix those things, things will work out well. And again, because basically I'm glass half empty kind of guy on this show anyways, that's what you have to hope for, because the alternative just makes everybody sick to their stomach.
And of course, it's not going to help if you don't have Beanie Wells. If you're the quarterback, if you're the Cardinals, obviously a quarterback's best friend is the running game. You got Maurice Jones-Drew, got 30 carries against the Ravens, and he went over 100 yards. First guy to do that against the Ravens D since last December. So, Wolf, if you have Beanie Wells, or more likely perhaps you do not have Beanie Wells, at least not a 100% healthy Beanie Wells, how does that impact the offense overall?
It's a big blow to this offense, because Beanie Wells really was earning the right to touch the ball more. We've been talking about this all season long. This guy was running the football with an authority that I have not seen him run the football with even his rookie year, not even close. Even in the Pittsburgh game before he got hurt, he wasn't gaining a lot of yardage, but my goodness, he was running the ball with a noticeable sense of urgency and an authority and a determination that I have not seen Beanie Wells run the ball with, driving his legs, making some cuts, putting his pad level down, getting it down, and driving, moving the pile. I was really, really impressed. And then he got hurt. And that last sentence, that's Beanie Wells. I was really, really impressed, and then he got hurt. And again, it's not like he's not tough. I can't stand it when people say that about a guy. Beanie Wells is tough, believe me. But you know what? Sometimes mama and papa, sometimes the DNA, sometimes the body just breaks down. Whether it's a pulled hamstring, it's a rolled ankle, it's a tweaked quad, whatever it is, there are injuries that keep people out of games. And just when Beanie Wells again was getting it going and earning the right to touch the ball, this injury happens in the Pittsburgh game, and now who knows what the future holds over the next couple of weeks for Beanie. It's a big blow.
According to Beanie, the MRI, you know, was positive news, right? I mean, you know, no surgery needed. I don't know. I guess that's just a guessing game right now, right, on his status going forward, Darren?
No, I don't think there's any question. I mean, I tend to take, of course, the pessimistic view coming back the other way, which is they're going to see how he is in practice. And I think it's at this point, it seems fairly obvious. If a guy doesn't practice all week, he's not going to play Sunday. And if he is able to practice, at least on a limited basis, they'll probably take him out pregame and run him around out there and see what's going to happen. But, again, you're starting to measure some things. I mean, you're 1-5. If Beanie's the guy that you want going forward, and it's a toss up of whether he should play or not, do you risk him against the Baltimore defense, quite frankly? Or do you not? Do you say, well, 1-5, we might as well, because, you know, what are we saving them for, type thing? I think there's a lot of questions that go into it. And the bottom line is, if he, like Wolf said, if he's hurt, he's hurt. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it. I mean, if he has swelling on the knee and he can't run on it, you can't run on it. And that's just how it is. And it's unfortunate for Beanie. And I know there's a ton of fans that are frustrated. I know Beanie's frustrated. I'm sure the team is frustrated, especially with Ryan Williams being out. Because as whatever flashes you've seen out of Alphonso Smith, he's Alphonso Smith. And you've got, you know, Lerod Stevens-Howling, who, you know, you're not going to give it to him 15 times. He's an explosive guy and can make some plays, but you're not going to give it to him 15 times. And Chester Taylor, in his one chance, obviously showed so little that Alphonso Smith surpassed him in that game and was inactive last week. So you're in a really hard place if Beanie can't go.
So if you're going to get a win against Baltimore, Wolf, I'm going to assume the defense leads the way. You're going to have to pretty much copy the blueprint that Jacksonville did on Monday night. You're going to have to hold Baltimore without a first down until 5:26 to go in the third quarter. I mean, you're really going to have to put out a stalwart defensive performance, right?
Yeah, and you're going to have to take advantage of some opportunities that may present itself in the game. The Baltimore offense is really inconsistent. You look at them, they're below the NFL average in yards and I mean well below, in yards, in passing yards, in rushing yards, in third down percentage, third down conversions, and red zone. They're 40%. They're converting red zone possessions into touchdowns 40% of the time. That is 11% below the NFL average. So offensively, they're really struggling. And the biggest surprise to me, guys, when I looked at film and watched this offense work and then looked at, did some research, looked at the stats, they're number 21 in the NFL in rushing attempts per game. And when I think of the Baltimore Ravens, I think of the Ravens and I think of the rushing attack and I think of Ray Rice. Ray Rice is one of the best every down backs in the league, in my opinion, okay? The guy runs the ball so well in between the tackles, and he can hold up in protection, and he catches the ball out of the backfield. He is very underrated, I think, to some degree, running back in the NFL, and yet they're trying to get Joe Flacco going. They throw the ball 35 times a game. They're trying to get Flacco going, and to me, I think the Ravens are going to try to return to pounding Ray Rice a little bit.
You and Terrell Suggs, the local guy and former ASU All-American, right, Hamilton star, said after the game, and I quote, "It baffles me. They fed their horse. We've got to feed our horse." Talking about how Maurice Jones-Drew got 30 carries and Ray Rice got 8. So if T. Sizzle goes over to the sideline, takes off his helmet, and then puts a headset on, maybe to call plays and play pass rusher, you know, I guess that would be the case. Yeah, you guys would both run Ray Rice.
Well, what was interesting was their offensive coordinator, Ken Cameron, was asked about what Suggs said and said, "I agree with him." And, you know, it is kind of interesting trying to get Flacco going. You know, obviously one of the guys he's throwing to is Anquan, and we know that Anquan gets frustrated when he can't be involved in it, and he was clearly frustrated Monday night. I think two of the most interesting things going into this game are purely psychological type things. I mean, first of all, we've all seen Ray Lewis get that team together before games and jack them up. I wouldn't be surprised if he stepped to the side this week and let Anquan take over. We know how Anquan can do that stuff, and you know how the way things ended here, you know Anquan is going to be up in everybody's face saying, "We've got to get this game." And I think, unfortunately, I think the worst thing that could have happened to the Cardinals was to have the Ravens play like they did and lose on Monday night.
Ding.
Because they are going to be a angry bunch of birds.
We've mic'd up Anquan Boldin before. I'm very curious to see what he sounds like, not only looks like, but sounds like on the field, because he can talk a pretty good game as well, and I'm sure he'll be in rare form against the Cardinals on Sunday, no doubt.
Yeah, but I also think the Ravens, even though I do believe they're going to be a lot more balanced, I also think the Ravens believe that this might be a game they could get Joe Flacco going. And again, Joe Flacco has really been inconsistent, almost a plateau at that position when you look at him over the last four years. And again, he's won playoff games. Don't get me wrong, you know. This guy has done an awful lot, but I don't think he's developing as quickly as the Baltimore Ravens would like to see. And maybe they look at this game also and they say to themselves, look, they have two young rookie corners, Patrick Peterson and A.J. Jefferson.
Jefferson's not a rookie.
Two young corners. He might as well be. This is his first year as a starter.
True.
This is the first year he's really gotten any type of playing time. So to me, even though he's a second-year guy, he's basically a rookie corner out there. And he's also looking at the secondary, I'm sure, Cam Cameron, and saying, well, they're banged up. Kerry Rhodes. Kerry Rhodes is an integral piece to that secondary because he gets everyone else lined up where they should be.
Dang.
And to me, I got to believe they might be salivating, looking at the 28th rated pass defense in the NFL and saying, my goodness, we might be able to get Joe Flacco going in this game. So, you know, expect to see a balanced attack, I think, out of the Ravens. But it wouldn't surprise me either if they went ahead and lined up and said, okay, Joe Flacco, it's going to be you and the Anquan Boldin show.
Speaking of Q, is it worth noting that he has the identical numbers to Early Doucette? 26 receptions, 2 touchdowns apiece. The exact same numbers so far in 2011. Crab cakes and football, gentlemen. That's what Maryland does, as we found out in Wedding Crashers. Wolf, you got your Halloween costume? Are you packing that on the Cardinals charter? What are you going to be Saturday night? I'm not going with you, just to let you know. Darren, I don't know about you. If you're going in costume, Wolf, from what I understand, has plans. It's kind of a big deal to him. He won't tell you exactly what he's dressing up as. We're going to have to wait Saturday night.
Yeah, I don't, Paul.
Usually he doesn't really leave the team hotel, so that's sort of the gist of that joke right there. Wolf sort of barricades himself in his room. You will not see him all weekend. Maybe for some crab cakes. I'll waft one in front of your door, Wolf. You can smell it, and it'll kind of lure you into the hallway of the hotel, okay?
Yeah.
For Darren Urban, Ron Wolfley, how are the message board guys there, Darren, by the way? How you doing? A little quick message board update desk. Any common denominators, themes, anything you need to say to the masses?
I think I'll take a pass on that, Paul.
That's what I thought. Paul Calvisi, Jim Omohundro, another edition of Cardinals Underground here on azcardinals.com.
Crab cakes.
Crab cakes and football. That's what Maryland does.